Hello and welcome to Bicycle Talk. It's August 17th, 2016. My name is Ron, otherwise known as Pedalin' Ron. I am here with my co-host, Fran Storch, and this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can reach us by calling or texting at 860-486-9487. Or you can also reach us by emailing to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to us on podcast, please use the email and you can contact us. So I am here today. We have a guest in our studio. We'll get to here in just a few moments because we have a big event coming up this weekend. And so it's really important that we talk about this, but I got to do a quick shout out to my two buddies that are still traveling across the country, barely on Bob from my spin class, as he is on day 31 of a 32-day pack tour. He entered Gardner, Massachusetts last night, and he's headed off to Boston for today. So he has completed his, the actual time they were riding was for 31 days. They had a one-day break in between, and he is arriving in Boston this afternoon. So go, Bob. That's pretty cool, and I'm sure he'll come back and give me all of his adventures and information, and maybe I can even pry him into the radio program here and have a little talk with him, which would be kind of fun. Another shout out to Mike Beatty, who is doing his transcontinental perimeter ride around the country, and he is riding 12,000 miles to feed hungry veterans. That's his mission. He is getting a lot closer, and I got word from him that he's probably going to be back around mid-September, in which case I will be joining him, and a few other people will be joining him as he rides back into Mansfield, which would be kind of a fun thing. So I will have more information on that in the future, too. He's had some very interesting days and has seen some very strange weather. He's been through tornadoes and thunderstorms and lightning and crazy stuff, and he's got a lot of things to talk about. And 12,000 miles, you got a lot to talk about. So anyway, shout out to those folks right there. What I want to talk about today, though, is I want to talk about the Steeplechase Bike Tour. And I have with me Lee Duffy, who is the executive director of the Windham Region No Freeze Project in Willimantic. And it is one of the three different causes that are used for the Steeplechase. It's a fundraising ride, bicycle ride, basically. Anyway, and that is coming up this Saturday. And welcome, Lee.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well, it's really nice to have you. Yeah. We have a great ride coming up, Steeplechase Bike Tour. It's we've got a bunch of different rides and even a walk this year, too, I believe. So anyway, first of all, let's back up to the place that you work for. This is a fundraising ride, so it is used to help some local charities in town, which is really nice. And tell us a little bit about what you do.
Okay, so this is only our second year as a beneficiary of the Steeplechase, and we're really excited because last year was the first year we were involved. And, God, it is such a terrific fun event as a fundraiser. A lot of us do fundraising in many different ways, a lot of our nonprofits. But this is so much fun. You're out all day. It's beautiful weather. You're around people who are excited about moving, riding bikes. There's families there toting kids around. And as of last year and this year, there's music in the afternoon. There's food. It's such a terrific event. And we are just really happy to be part of it. So I will get to what I do, but day of event is kind of what our organization is doing. So we're going to be there, our board in full force, a whole bunch of volunteers who make this happen to participate and to make sure that the everything goes smoothly for registration so folks can get in and get out quickly. But the Windham Region No Freeze Project is an agency started in 2003, really dedicated to the survival of homeless adults in our region. That's our broad-based mission, if you will. In the last couple of years, we have not only acted as a hospitality center shelter, drop-in center for folks struggling with homelessness. But we've also been very involved in the Connecticut statewide goals to end homelessness, which is phenomenal. Connecticut, I don't know if you guys realize, is the first state to end chronic veteran homelessness. We did that 2 years ago. That was last year's goal. And are recognized on a federal level for that.
Wow, I was unaware.
It is pretty phenomenal, which what that means is, do we still have homeless veterans? There may be some out there who are choosing not to engage for many different reasons. But for anybody that walks in as a veteran and needs housing and help, they can get it very quickly.
That's great.
So this year, the goal for the state is to end chronic adult homelessness, which is our folks who have been homeless for over a year, have a disability attached to that, could be any kind of disability, and who need a huge amount of support. So the No Freeze Project has been sort of the coordinator of our Northeast Coordinated Access Network, which is our version of this new system to help get folks who are homeless help. So we've taken on that. So at the same time that we are making sure people survive through the cold by providing shelter, we are also kind of coordinating the efforts to end homelessness in the Northeast region. So that's my sort of canned, that's what the No Freeze does.
That's a big responsibility that you have.
But, you know, it's incredibly exciting to work on an initiative to end a pretty horrible social problem.
Well, I agree.
Not that people aren't doing that, but...
No, but I think that, you know, there's a lack of awareness to what we have out there on the streets, so to speak, as far as homeless people go. We had a number of changes years ago where we changed our mental health system in the state of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And when we changed our mental health system, I remember all of a sudden there were a lot more people on the streets that we hadn't seen before because we were institutionalizing them. And now they're out. And some of them are not capable of taking care of themselves, so therefore we have, we have an issue with homelessness.
Yeah,
not to mention, you know, financial situations where people are just unable to pay their rent and or pay their mortgages, and they lose their residence, and now they're homeless. So what you're doing is just a tremendous job of being socially aware and taking care of people.
Well, and I think we should be proud we live in a state that has chosen to tackle this like this, because this is not just to us. This is statewide resources being also dedicated to solving the issue of homelessness. So
right.
It's pretty exciting because I love working at the shelter. For me, it's a harm reduction program, meaning you can walk in our door. You don't have to have ID. You don't have to be clean and sober. You don't have to be on medication if you have a mental health issue. You can just walk in our door. And most shelters, there are requirements and barriers to getting in right away.
Right.
So for us, that has been a harm reduction philosophy we've had from the very beginning, because we want to engage those folks. We want them to come in. And now that we're looking at ending homelessness across the state, there are more resources that we can connect people to. And it's, you know, people say to me, oh my gosh, you work in a shelter, how sad. And I go, not really. Think about the people that volunteer and work in places like that.
Oh, sure.
They're positive. They're loving. They're compassionate.
Right.
So when folks walk in our door, in particular our guests, the folks we call our guests who are struggling with homelessness, they're in a setting that's very positive and upbeat and community-oriented and loving. And I work in the middle of that, so it's actually a really nice
place to
be. That's
pretty nice. That's pretty nice. Well, I'm going to say we because I am a member of the board of directors of the Steeplechase Bike Tour and have been with them for a number of years. We welcome you to our organization because this is it's a really positive thing, and it's people on bicycles, and how can it get any better than that?
Yeah, it is. It's fabulous. And it's funny because, we just had a gentleman come to us because he had a bicycle that was broken, and that is his transportation to and from work. Speaking of bicycles.
I was going to bring that up, that your population that you see it from a different place than where I see it. Now, I'm in the bicycle industry, so I deal with bicycle shops and selling to bicycle shops and selling some fairly expensive and elaborate machines to these folks that are buying them. And you know, we have a lot of riders that will show up on the steeplechase that will be on these bikes that have spent a lot of money on them. The other end of cycling is the fact that the folks that you're dealing with are often using their bicycle for transportation. Now, there's all different levels of life that use bicycles for transportation. I have friends who have very expensive bicycles and ride their bikes all the time, and they also use their bike to transport themselves back and forth to work. And so they're also using a bicycle in that direction. But in they also have a motor vehicle that they can transport themselves with and go get groceries with and run errands and do all these different things. So your clientele is probably using the bicycle because it is their transportation. So what a great thing this is, because the bicycle is an inexpensive way of being able to transport yourself.
It is,
absolutely. And still be mobile and independent, which is important. So,
it is, and I like that you understand the critical nature of that, because for any of us, if our car didn't work, what would that mean for our life?
It can be tough.
It can be tough. So now your bike is not working. And so some of our funds that we have, we call them our guest assistance funds, that go for whatever somebody needs to keep them going and keep them out of homelessness, have gone to bike repairs. And it's a very legitimate, and it makes good sense. And we work with a local bike shop. I don't know if I can say their name, but...
You can just leave it at that.
Okay.
I guess we can do that. There are a couple of local bike shops.
There are a couple of local bike shops. So, so it is really kind of poignant that this fundraiser is kind of about biking. In fact, it's neat because you have both ends of the spectrum, as you said. And we often have some of our guys who say, we'll come and ride and we'll try to collect money. But the reality of it is, when you're living in a state of homelessness,
right,
it is very difficult to focus on anything other than food, clothing, and shelter. So the attentions are always there, and we're like, sure, come on. But then...
Yeah, but it's more of a where am I today and where will I be tomorrow kind of situation. So they're in a different game as far as that goes. You know, they should just ride their bikes. I used to be a local bicycle shop many years ago, and I dealt with a fairly large number of people from this region that are in the position of using their bicycles for transportation, because that is their transportation. That's all they have. And, we had a policy of if there's something wrong with the bike and it's obvious, and you know when it's obvious that this person can't take care of it, that just take care of it. Just take care of it, you know.
Nice.
My guys would come up to me and they'd go, Ron, this guy's got no brakes on the back of his bike. And I just feel really, I said, can you find some stuff in the back to like make it work? And he'll go, yes, go ahead, do it. And then we send, and they're just so very grateful. Mm. So, you know, when you're in need like this, it's really nice to have that security of people that are willing to care for you.
It's true. And it's very cost effective, because keeping up a bike is so much less costly than keeping up a car.
Oh, you don't know the half of it.
unless you have a very high-end bike, I don't know.
No, not at all. You're absolutely right. And the average American, this is kind of a stat I like to throw out all the time, spends about $8,000 a year on their car.
Yeah.
And the thought that $8,000, that's a lot of bicycles.
Totally,
you know,
is. It's
a lot of bicycles, and you know that $8,000 you spend on your car, and you're spending all that time in your car, and you're sitting, and now all the research that shows that if you sit too long, it's as bad as smoking cigarettes. I mean, where do I start? Where do I end? It's get out on your bikes. You know, your bikes are great. Great. And we have a great opportunity this weekend for you to get out on your bicycle for the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is Saturday, August 20th. And it is at the Eastern Connecticut State University sports complex where the baseball field is and the track is. It's a very nice facility. We moved there a couple of years ago, which was really nice. And it's just a great time to get out and meet some people, some new friends, maybe your neighbors there. You never know. You never know who you're going to run into. I think we were averaging somewhere around 300 to 350 riders a year. Sometimes we've gone up over 400 at times, depending on the year. But, you know, we do get quite a turnout. And we get people coming from all around. I have a friend coming from California, and he is borrowing one of my bikes because, you know, it's easier than trying to bring his bike here. And he is a former employee from my bicycle shop, believe it or not.
Wow.
And he's coming out to visit his parents, and he wants to ride the steeplechase. So that's awesome. Pretty cool. That's a pretty exciting thing. So shout out to Chris if you're listening. He's in San Diego. But anyway, he is headed in this direction, and he's going to come back. And he was so excited when he talked to me because he's like, I just can't wait to get back out on the roads that I used to ride on, because I turned him on to cycling. You know, I turned him on to it when he was just a young kid. He was probably 13 or 14 years old when I first met him. And he'd hang out at the bike shop, you know. And then, you know, he became an employee at the bike shop. And then it went on from there. So I knew him all through his high school years. I knew him all through his college years. It's going to be great to see him. It'll be really nice.
That's a beautiful thing. It's kind of like in the old days, the guys hung out around the garage.
It was the same idea.
The cars, but it's the same thing with the bikes.
Well, my dad had a garage. So, you know, it's kind of a very familiar environment for me. Yeah.
Well, once in a while, we'll have somebody not necessarily connected to a bike shop come in and just set up their bike stand in the shelter in the summer when we're a drop-in. And a lot of these folks know how to fix their own bike. They may not have the tool and they may not have the part, but clearly that's the other beautiful thing about bikes. They're not really complicated machines.
It's a really simple machine.
Yeah. So he'll bring his stand in and just a few tools that they may not have access to or have on them. And people will take a few minutes tune it up, tighten it up, or fix something they needed to fix.
Sure.
Which is a really lovely kind of volunteer opportunity for somebody who knows a bit about bikes. That helps people out a lot. It's a really tremendous
Well, that
thing.
Might be something that we should talk about in the future as a possibility, because I know I was approached by someone else in the Windham region about maybe putting together a small, almost like a bike cooperative type of situation, so that there would be tools available and a work stand available, that sort of thing.
I
thought it was somewhere, it was either within your organization or Perception Programs or WAME or one of us, you know, one of those groups out there that we were talking about doing this. And this is done in bigger cities. I know that Hartford, I had a gentleman on the air with me in one of my earlier shows, and Tony runs a program in Hartford, which is called BC Co. And it's I'm not going to get that right, so I'm not going to say it. It's part of an organization in Hartford. It's very close to Hartford Hospital, and he's got a little storefront there, and they have a small organization, nonprofit organization, and they use it to take bicycles that are donated to them, a number of them which came from this university, when they clean up in the spring, when the students leave all their bikes behind. We don't know why they leave their bikes behind, but they do. And so he took a bunch of those bikes back, and he fixes them up, and then they provide them to those who can't afford bicycles, which is really a nice thing. It's a really cool service. And there's a system with the kids that they run where you work to own the bike, sort of thing. And he teaches bicycle repair, and it's just, there is a system that is in Hartford that is in place. There used to be one in New Britain also, which is the same thing, and a friend of mine, Cliff Parker, ran that one. And he was he's a machinist by trade and kind of got sick of being in the real working world, and he dropped out for a little while, and he started this nonprofit, and you know it it kept him fed for a few years and made him happy. And that was a good thing, because sometimes that's how we end up in these nonprofits, is we end up by just following our passion and, you know, escaping corporate America for a little while and, you know, seeing where the people are.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
It's a beautiful thing. So we have a couple of other organizations that are involved with this. We have Perception Programs in Willimantic, and we also have WAIM, which is Wyndham Area Interfaith Ministries. And do you want to put some information in about those?
Yeah, I can mention that Perception Programs is a behavioral health program that we work closely with, and WAIM as well. WAIM has a lot of different programs, so I don't really know, unless we pull them up and read them off.
Right.
They do a lot of things. One of them is provide goods for folks, household goods,
right,
bedding, clothing, that kind of thing. And between the three of us, we kind of are a safety net for folks who are struggling. Clearly, we're housing and shelter and connection for homelessness. Wayne works with the same population of folks to try to get them what they may need. And Perceptions as well, if somebody's struggling with behavioral health or substance use. So we're all kind of connected together in terms of the folks that we work with and the referral process. We all refer to each other. So it's really, when you're donating or supporting the steeplechase, you're really supporting a safety net.
Sure.
For folks in the community. And I love the fact, and I know you've said this, Ron, that this money stays local.
We were talking about that earlier this morning, because I was on another radio program this morning, and we were talking about that, and it's amazing how much of the money stays local.
Yeah.
The money is, it's maybe 11 or 12% is used for administrative fee, which isn't anyone's salary. It's what we need for goods and services to be able to put the ride on. Mm-hmm. So we don't really have anything that gets swallowed up by anyone's salary here. And the rest of it goes to the organizations. So it's really nice, because you're keeping local money local. It's not getting eaten up by a large national system.
Right.
And I won't mention any names, but there are a couple of large fundraising organizations out there, and this is a terrible thing, but in the industry, because I'm in the bicycle industry, we refer to those rides as the disease rides. And I know it's terrible, but it's what it's known as, and there's an awful lot of money behind that. The one that I will point a finger at, because of an unfortunate affiliation with a gentleman who cheated on his bicycle for many years, the Livestrong Foundation is a classic example of how a large organization like that, that you think you're throwing a lot of money at in a good way, gets swallowed up by a lot of salaries.
Mm.
And I know he's no longer affiliated with them, and they don't want him anywhere near their organization mm-hmm. anymore, but it's kind of a classic example of who he is.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll leave my friend Mr. Armstrong out of this right now, and we can talk about him on another show. I'll get a couple of my ranting friends in here, and we can have a good time on the whole bicycle racing, drugging, and problem with sports and drugs and money and competition. Okay. But that's another story for another time. So anyway, but this is the steeplechase. So we've got a lot of cool things going on here. We've got the 5-mile walk. We've got a 20-mile bicycle ride. We've got a 35-mile bicycle ride, a 50-mile bicycle ride, new one this year. And then we have a 62-mile bicycle ride, which is what we call a metric century, 100 kilometers. And we have a 100-mile bike ride.
And I have to say, so I was in the wagon Wednesday with Jim and Ed and Nancy spraying the arrows on the
I think I saw
roots.
Your picture on Facebook.
Yes, in the 90-degree weather.
Yeah.
But that 65
yeah.
is beautiful.
Thank you.
We went down one section, I want to say Lebanon, but I'm not sure, where you go down a hill and there's this amazing panorama of another hill and fields, and It's stunning. I mean,
maybe you were on the 50-mile ride. Were you doing that?
Oh, maybe 50. I'm sorry.
I know where you were.
It was the 50. It's
you were at the top of Bog Lane. Fran will know this one because we ride there a lot, and it is possibly the most picturesque view you've ever seen.
It's Ireland.
It's Ireland. That's it. That's what we call it, Ireland. I've been calling it that for years. I remember when I first found that, and how did I find it? I was out riding my bike one day. I'm just riding along, and I had to stop and just look for a while and just looked out. And I have a picture on Facebook that I put on of that spot because actually I'll pull it up over here. But anyway, it's on Facebook because I was putting out and I didn't get any comments on this yet because I missed the last meeting because I had something else I had to be at. But I've been putting out pictures on Facebook and saying, where am I now? It's kind of like, where's Waldo? But no, where's Pedlin Run? And I had a few takers, and someone finally figured that one out when they saw it, and they looked at it, and they said, they referred to it as Farmer's Cow? And because there is a Farmer's Cow farm, which is over on the road next to it. Mm-hmm. And I gave them an okay on that one. Yeah. And I said, absolutely. And they commented back, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. It's gorgeous. And this is what we have here in northeastern Connecticut. We live in a gifted area for cycling. And that's why I love riding my bike here so much. And everyone I bring into this area that comes from outside of this area, I shouldn't be doing this because this is going to get like eventually nationally broadcast, and now we're gonna ruin everything that we love about this area. But I'm gonna say it anyway. This is where you ride a bike. People come in from California, they go for a ride here, and they look at me and go, "I can't believe you live here. This is like the most incredible place I've ever ridden a bike." And it really is. So. Yeah. If you are listening and you are interested in seeing the most incredible area on a bicycle, please come and see us this Saturday at the ECSU Sports Complex in Mansfield. And you can register the day of. If you want to register early, you can go to bikereg.com. That's BIKEREG.com. And you can register for it there online if you wish. Or you can register at active.com, and or you can just register right there the day of also, which is really, really nice. And the information is online at steeplechasebiketour.org, and you'll see pictures, and you'll see all sorts of information there on the ride.
On our fabulous new website.
Yes, we have a new website this year. Very exciting. And the pictures just keep flashing through. This is really cool. My favorite picture, though, is you'll get to one of the pictures and you'll see a bunch of hands. And they're all in together. And they all have painted fingernails. And they're all different colors. So people see that and they go, what is that all about? And that is all about, well, there's a badge of honor on this ride. Okay, and the badge of honor is if you do the 100-mile ride, the Eastford Baptist Church, there were a couple of little girls there many, many years ago, preteen, right, when they first started doing this, Fran? What do you think?
Yeah, they were probably right.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, these two little girls decided that they wanted to contribute, so they volunteered to paint people's fingernails. And they had all these colors, and they had a little table laid out, and they are now in college, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, they're still there.
Oh my God. They're still there.
So if you do the 100-mile ride, and believe me, when you get to that point of the ride, you have done a big chunk of the ride, and you've done some pretty mighty big hills at that point. So when you get to that point, you're real tired, and there are the girls, and they paint your fingernails. And I have seen the most, and I don't know if this is a good thing to say or not, the most manly of men stand there and get their nails painted, and they come back and they just show it off at the end, like, I did the 100-mile ride.
Yeah.
Because they had their nails painted, because you can't do it in any of the other rides.
That's great.
That's the one. So it's very, very cool. And, you know, that so there are some characteristics to this ride which make it nice.
It's fun. I'm learning some of the history because I have not been involved on that level. And I thought it was really great about the Holy Cow. I drive by that all the time, and I always thought, what is this farm? It has a Holy Cow chapel. I had no idea it was a stop on the steeplechase.
That's exactly why it was created.
And you know, the whole point behind steeplechase, if people are listening, you know, they're thinking, well, track and field steeplechase, you know, it's the Olympics, you know.
Did the steeplechase get its name, Ron?
So the steeplechase has an interesting history, and it goes back to the very early days of steeplechase. I, at the time, owned a bicycle shop in Willimantic, which I can call Rainbow Cycle because it's not there anymore, so it doesn't matter. But it was Rainbow Cycle Sport in Willimantic, and I have been known for putting on a number of bike rides because I would put on at least two a year just from the shop as an organized thing from the shop to get people enthused about cycling. So I was asked to come to the meeting and sit down, and they wanted to kind of get the – Ed Austin was there and a few other people, Penny Newberry. Do you remember Penny Newberry?
I do.
She was there back in those days. And they were, you know, kind of picking my brain as to, you know, what to do to put on a ride, and I was giving them some feedback. But I was just there for information, and that was it. And so the idea was that they were using – the churches as rest stops. And I had said something about, you know, I grew up in a church, and, you know, the churches are kind of famous for putting on dinners and foods and, you know, food type things and for events. And, you know, it's like you could use them for your rest stops, and then, you know, the people of the church could make goodies and things to hand out, and that would be it. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's great, that's great. And I said, yeah, and you could ride from one church to another church, and you could call it the steeplechase. And I said it as a joke. And the room got quiet. It got real quiet. And everybody kind of stared at me, looked at me, and went, that's it. And that was the name of the steeplechase bike tour.
That's great.
So that's what we're doing. We're chasing steeples. Well, this particular place, which is right down the street from where I live on Bassett's Bridge Road, we kind of needed a rest stop there because it's part of the 20-mile ride, and it's, you know, the 20-mile riders need more places to stop or stops closer together. Mm-hmm. And so Ed Austin, who has a son, Warren, who lives right across the street from there, he built this thing with with David Stevens, and they built this thing and put a steeple on the top of it and made a church where there wasn't a church. And it is run by one of the churches, I think. There is a church.
First Church of Christ, I think.
Is that who does that one?
In Stores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think that's
So it is run by one of the churches. But what the beauty of the Holy Cow Family Shelter, yes, it does say Holy Cow Family Shelter on it. And it does also have Reverend M. Bossy.
Or it used to. I don't know if it still has that, but that sign was there for a long time. Pastor M. Bossy.
Pastor M. Bossy.
Always roams.
Always roams. Right, right. Well,
don't forget the bowling balls.
Well, David and Chelsea Stevens are
a hoot.
Folks with a good sense of humor. And David is a, as Chelsea will tell you, has a very bad habit of taking on wayward animals.
Yes.
So they usually have a very interesting collection of animals there. And one year there was a donkey,
Chester the donkey,
and Chester would come over and say hi, and you could pet Chester. And they usually have a big fire going, or they have a fire pit of some sort going on there.
You can
have s'mores there, and they are a hoot. They're just really fun people, and the animals are in the pasture with you, and you know, everybody's just stopping and just hanging out because it's just
so
a
New
cool
England.
Place. It's very New
so
England.
So New England.
It
and
is.
You can see a picture of it on our website. It's one of those rolling pictures.
Yes, you can.
And there's a pyramid of bowling balls that's always there. And periodically we'll see the pyramid and it will be knocked over and in disarray. And we ask Dave, what's going on? How did the bowling balls fall down? He says, the cows knock it down.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the day of the steeplechase, usually they put on top of the pyramid, they put a bowling pin.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So cows must be neurotic, and they can't stand to see things all in their place, so they have to knock it over. That must be it.
Cows just like to knock against stuff. And sometimes it's because they have flies or they're
itchy. They're rubbing against it or whatever.
Falls over.
Yeah, there it is, the day of with the bowling pin on top, as we were looking at this flashing through here. So, yeah, there's a lot of character on this ride. And a number of characters who come to the ride. And we would like it very much if you were one of the characters out there listening that would come and do the ride. If you don't want to do the ride and you still want to help out, you can always talk to the registration table about that, too. We could always use your help. So, anyway, yeah, the steeplechase is just, it's a really cool event. And this is our 25th year.
That's amazing.
I find it hard to believe that it's been going on for 25 years.
I could tell, you can tell when you're fundraising a lot, when you walk into an event like this, how well organized it is because it's been going on so long. You've worked out a lot of the kinks. That when we were asked to step in and do the day of, it was kind of like, oh my God, really? But it was pretty clear that it's just been going on for a long time. You've got all the big stuff is organized and worked out. And really all you're doing, it appears, is tweaking stuff, rides, whatever, to fit whatever you need to fit things to. But
anything that you see, a little something that you need to help out with. We even have a suggestion area, and we're going to have cards that we're going to hand out to people at the end of the ride for suggestions. Plus, you can do it online, too, at the website this year, because we're always looking for ways to make it better, if we can. You know, anything we can do to make it better. Big tip of the hat to Ruth Gordon from Perception Programs. Big tip of the hat to Victoria Nemirovsky from WAME.
Yeah.
They've been with it for a long time. And Ruth is the commander in chief of organization. She is very meticulous, and I mean this only in a very kind way, Ruth, if you're listening, but she has a loose leaf notebook, which has gotten so thick over the years because every year she has every single thing in its place. And she kind of reminds me of you sometimes, Fran. So anyway,
I have a computer.
You have a computer, but you also do things that way. So it's good. It's good. Organized people are extremely useful in situations like this and important.
Yes, you can see that you want to have an event that from the bicycler and the participants' perspective looks like real easy. We just show up. We register. People are great. They're glad to see us. There's stuff for us when we come back. You want it to look like that. But there's a lot of hard work that goes behind
that. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, and being an event organizer for other events, too, I can tell you that there's a lot more to it than what you see the day of.
Right. We hope you don't see it. We hope you
Well, we hope you don't. I put on a couple of races, and there's a little more tension there because we get these athletes that show up, and they're there to race, and they're pretty serious about what they're doing, and they tend to be they're nervous about their race, and they don't want to have to think about anything but getting there, getting registered, putting their number on their back and going. It can get a little tense at times.
Well, I think the steeplechase, not a race, is run like that, but it's not. You know what I mean? You have the efficiency and you have it organized really well so that it just feels very easy to come in and come and go.
We have an amazing number of volunteers. I think Ruth told me at one point that was close to 100 volunteers involved with this thing to put it on, which is pretty incredible for when you think of 100 volunteers for an event which houses, 350 to 400 riders. That's a lot of people involved, and everybody does it as a volunteer.
Right.
There's no money spent on anything here. It's all money that comes back into the entire system, which is very, very nice. Mm-hmm. So it's just it gives you a good, warm and fuzzy feeling about people.
It does, and your community.
Nice. Yeah, and your community.
It's a beautiful community event.
And people on bicycles.
And people on bikes,
which is why I'm here. This is what I do. I'm talking about people on bicycles because people on bicycles are good.
They are.
Because I am the self-proclaimed ambassador of cycling. So I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did know that, Ron,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
I did.
It's been
I'm afraid you're going to ask me if I ride a bike.
Well, I you know, you have to, well, there's two things that I will ask you. I'll ask you if you ride a bike. That's one. We'll table that for a second. But there's another question. If you're a guest on my show, there's another question I ask everyone who comes on the show. And that is, first of all, when was your first, what the earliest experience that you can remember in your life with a bicycle?
Oh, that's easy. So I grew up in Mansfield for the most part. And my dad used to take us all to the dump, the Mansfield town dump.
That's a good dump.
Oh, my God. And we would, this is how we got our bikes.
It's an exciting dump.
We would scavenge through the dump, bring back whatever we could. And you usually found decent frames and bikes.
Yeah. That's just why maybe it's a good dump.
Yeah. And we would come back and we would fix them. He would have us fix them and those would be our bikes. We never got new bikes. That's where we got our bikes when I was probably 7, 8 for me. Anyway, that's when that kind of started. So, and I have siblings that still do that with their kids. They make a ton of money, but they go to the dump. They get it. The dumps, you can still do that, I must say.
Yeah, they do have signs up now at the Mansfield transfer station, which they can't call it. We don't want to call it a dump anymore. We call it now the transfer station. So they do have signs up that say no scavenging. But I know for a fact that there's often heads are turned in the opposite direction when scavenging occurs.
Yes.
So I think it's really meant for a select few that maybe come in and violate that too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see things like bicycle frames pulled aside out of the metal bin.
Right, which makes total sense.
I mean, why ruin something? And why scrap something that still has some usability?
Yeah.
So, that's
terrific.
You know, I don't know your dad, but I like him already.
He was a university professor, believe it or not.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my dad, my first bike came from an actual bicycle shop in Norwich, and it was a used bicycle shop. And they didn't sell new bicycles. They sold nothing but used bicycles. So my father spent a whopping Lincoln on my first bicycle.
Wow.
That's what he did.
That's
and that was my first official bicycle that I got. Anyway, you got scavenged from the dump and then.
Yeah, so as a young person I had a bike, but I didn't as I got to be a young adult, it was a car all the way, and then probably 6 years ago or so, actually at the encouragement of Ray, who I of Thread City Cyclers, who I worked with at the time.
Ray Torres?
Yes.
Great guy.
When we worked in the same organization, I somehow knew that he was biking and he'd talk. And I went and I bought a bike. And I was semi-successful at riding it. Where I live is a hill going either way. I'm on Crane Hill Road. So
Come out, you go up.
And I didn't ride it enough to get good at being able to go up hills. And I rode it to work a few times, but I got to be honest with you, I'd get to work and then I'd be too tired to ride it.
Well, look where you live. So in order to get, so for those of you who are listening, all right, I'm speaking with Lee Duffy here, and she lives in a place where she lives in the Great Valley of Crane Hill, which if you go in one direction on Crane Hill, you go up maybe 10% grade, something like that. If you go in the other direction, it may be an 11% grade, but it's not pretty. And it's pretty when you get to the top, because you're way up on top of Mansfield City Road and you're looking down over the whole region and it's gorgeous. But I repeat, you're looking down upon the whole region. So then to go anywhere from there, you're going to go back down a hill. So in order to get back there, you have to climb back up. And climbing up Mansfield City Road is not one of the most challenging hills in the area, but is a challenging road because it climbs at a pretty steady pace for a while, and then it gets steep at the very end, which is where those are the hills that really they make or break a cyclist. You either get better at them and stronger at them and learn how to. I have a thing when I'm coaching people on when they're riding their bikes outside.
And you put County Road on the steeplechase. Thank you.
Yeah, I did. But you The reason I, well, we won't get into that. That's we have this discussion all the time. I put County Road on there because County Road is shaded and it's August. And if we get the weather that we're going to have on Saturday, which is going to be in the upper 80s and sunny, you do not want the other alternative leaving Woodstock Valley, because the other alternative leaving Woodstock Valley, which is a 5 mile climb on Route 197, is completely open to trees. The very bottom is completely shaded, and once you get off of that, you're just going uphill on a very wide state road and lots of pavement and lots of heat coming off the pavement, and I avoid those things. I prefer to, I will take a steeper, more difficult climb on a back road over that on a hot day any day. So that's the reason why. But Mansfield City Road is kind of one of those roads. And it is really, boy, yeah, you. I could see where becoming a cyclist or even just a commuting bicycle rider from where you live would require some serious motivation. Yeah. I think it's the right word.
So I did do something recently. I don't even know if I should say it, because depending on the cycling group I'm with, it goes over badly or well. I purchased an e-bike.
Yay. Good thing.
Mom,
yes,
you.
Very good.
Thank
I'm going to do a whole show on e-bikes.
Excellent.
I plan on doing that. Maybe I'll have you back on for that. We can talk okay. about that a little bit because you're an end user. I think e-bikes are excellent.
Okay.
I am not at all against that. I'm not that purist guy that says if you don't pedal it, you don't belong on it. I'm not one of those guys at all. I am very aware of the e-bike phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon. It is catching on here in the U.S. It's really strong in Europe. And why is it catching on? Well, I'll tell you why. Because what we have is we have a lot of people like myself who have been riding bicycles our entire lives. We love riding our bicycles. We'll probably continue to pedal a bicycle. But for one reason or another, we may not be able to power it completely any longer, being either an age issue, a fitness issue, a health concern issue. Maybe there's an injury involved. And, you know, you take a look at these monstrous hills, and it's hard to get up them. I have a great e-bike story for you, and it is it's related to one of my customers who I sell to out in the Newington area, and he has, of course, a bunch of people like myself and like Fran who ride our bikes at a fairly high level. We like to ride our bikes a lot. We go out, ride, ride, ride. And his wife is what Fran likes to call a toe-tapper. So his wife stays at home, and she's like, when are you getting back? When are you getting back? And she looks at her watch, and she's tapping her toe, and she's like, we have things to do. I want you to not spend all day on your bicycle. You know, this is a thing that you deal with when you're a bike person. So anyway, he kept telling her, I just love to ride my bike. It's just, you don't understand. I just love to ride my bike. Well, if I could ride my bike with you, then I would. He bought her an e-bike. So he bought her an e-bike, and they went out, and he took her for one of his favorite 25-mile loops that he likes to do. Took her out for a ride. She stayed with him. No problem. As a matter of fact, when she got to the hills, she hurt him because he couldn't keep up with her on the hills. So, but she had the power, because the way they work is as you push more pressure on the pedal, the motor engages more, and it helps you. It's more of an electronic assist than, I'm assuming that's the type that you have.
Yes.
And they do make them with just throttles too, but with the electronic assist, or the motorized assist, you're able to use it where you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you want to pedal, you just keep pedaling. So here's the point. You're still pedaling. You're still out there. You're still moving. You're still riding your bike. Mm-hmm. So she goes out and does these 25-mile rides with him, and she has become completely turned on to cycling. And now she gets it. She knows why he's out riding his bike, because she loves it too.
Yeah.
And they can go places and do things with one another now. Yeah. I think they're great. They're also really good. There's a couple of delivery services that are using them in cities now, and they're cargo bikes. So they're really big, heavy bikes. They got a lot of, you know, weight they're putting in them. They have an electronic assist on them. Yeah. Brilliant idea. You need that.
Yeah. That's what I need to drop, to use the bike to get to work and then not worry about getting home.
Right.
Even if I'm tired.
Right.
So particularly for my age group, I'm almost 60. I'm not going to do 100-mile rides. I know I won't, even though you guys are awesome, and I know you're not even near 60. But it's not going to happen for me. It's not going to happen
for me. Ron's near 60.
Okay.
I'm near 60.
He's near
60. I'm on the other side of it.
Yeah, he's 61.
I'm 61.
Oh, all right. So you just blew my whole theory.
Oh, that's okay. No, it's all right.
I mean, I'm a new cycler. I'm not somebody who's just now going to start cycling long distances. I know I'm not. I want to actually use it for transportation. I want to use it
wonderful
for that. And that is exactly what this will do. It will help me to get out of my house and up my hills.
Well, you'll get up Crane Hill now.
To
won't
work.
Have any problem with that.
And get home. And maybe take longer routes because it's fun and I want to stay on the road.
Yay. That's how you get hooked, you know. You start taking the long way home. I used to ride my bicycle to work when I had my bicycle shop. I had a big van I used for, you know, doing things for the business and, you know, going to the dump and other various places. And I drove that van 3,000 or 4,000 miles a year because I rode my bike back and forth to work.
Yeah.
And so I ride my bike back and forth to work, and I would usually ride in the morning because I had a mountain of repairs to do, and I'd get in early and I'd work on bikes. And then at the end of the day, instead of riding straight home, I'd take the long way home. Because, you know, it's just so nice.
It's relaxing.
What a great wind down at the end of your day.
Absolutely.
You get to go out, you ride your bike, you smell the flowers. And you're going to discover things that you didn't realize existed. Fran and I comment on this every year. And we talk about, the wild roses are out. Or the lilacs just came out. Or right now, you smell the grapes. You'll just be riding along and go, what's that smell? Oh, it's the grapes. The grapes are now ripe. And you start smelling things. You don't smell that in your car. Mm. You know, we ride around now in automobiles, and their windows are up, and the air conditioning's on. You can't smell a thing on the outside.
Right.
Now, you also smell the product of the agricultural system that we have out there. So there are certainly some farms that have some good, strong odors when you go by. But, you know, I grew up on a farm. And to me, that's just like, to me, it's refreshing to smell something that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's just so nice. And you hear things. And, you know, I was riding, this is one you'll have to discover. They're gone now because it's over. The nesting season's gone. But there is, if you go over to the rail trail in North Windham and you're heading out of Willimantic in North Windham, there is a place where the pavement ends and there's a bar there, mm-hmm. and then the dirt section begins. There's a big bog.
Mm-hmm. I know where that is, yeah.
Have you seen the blue herons yet?
No.
Oh, my God.
I haven't been out there this year.
Like probably a dozen or more nesting and having their babies there, and the little chicks are sticking their heads out over the top.
Oh, my
God. It is unbelievable. And I just, you know, it's been getting bigger and bigger every year, and I was trying to figure out why. And then I heard a report on National Public Radio on the other last week, and apparently the bald eagles have been so protected up in Maine that they're growing in population, and they're scaring the herons further south because their herons are like food for them.
Wow.
So we have this amazing nesting of the great blue heron right there in North Windham. It's kind of behind where the bowling alley is right there. Oh, you got to check it out.
I will.
Not only that, you got to ride that rail trail. That rail trail is fabulous, and you'll love it on your bike.
I actually did it on my other bike probably a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I will report back because the e-bike is on order, and I would let you know how it works in terms of lifestyle change for
me. I'm dying to hear that. I think that's great. So anyway, we have been here. I have Lee Duffy here from the Windham No Freeze Shelter. Is that good?
Windham Region No Freeze Hospitality Center. We have the longest name, I think, of any tiny nonprofit.
That's a mouthful.
So before we go, why don't you guys tell us review
how
you, where the steeplechase is, and how to sign up, and can you sign up online and all that stuff?
Yep. I was just going to go over all that. So anyway, if you are interested in doing the Steeplechase Bike Tour, it is this Saturday, August 20th, 2016. You can find out about it online on the web at steeplechasebiketour.org. There is also a Facebook page for the Steeplechase Bike Tour. You can check us out there too. Registration information is on there. If you click down on registration information, you'll see you can sign up either through bikereg.com or through active.com. And you can do it that way, or you can just pull down a registration page also, I believe, and go direct. Or you could register the day of the event. Registration opens at 7 a.m., and we will all be there bright and shiny. And we will be hopefully seeing you there. So please come to the Steeplechase Bike Tour. This is a wonderful, wonderful event. It's been going on now for 25 years. And it's all for a very, very good cause. And what could be better? It's riding a bicycle. It's a beautiful thing. So thank you very much for being with me here today, Lee.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. I am going to sign off here. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk, and my co-host is Fran Storch. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you would like to reach us, you can call or text at 860-486-9487. Or if you would like to reach us and you're listening to this in podcast, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I am Pedaling Ron. I will see you soon.